Today is Thursday, May 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump cancels the planned upcoming talks between him and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
I've decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th.
And an exclusive interview with Malaysia's new prime minister on what it will take for the nation to become fully developed and when. Plus, an American has been chosen to sing the official World Cup song. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday called off his planned June 12th summit meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Based on the recent statement of North Korea, I have decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th. While many things can happen and a great opportunity lies ahead, potentially, I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea and, indeed, a setback for the world.
The president said he has spoken not only to Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but also to South Korea and Japan.
And they are not only ready should foolish or reckless acts be taken by North Korea, but they are willing to shoulder much of the cost of any financial burden, any of the costs associated by the United States in operations if such an unfortunate situation is forced upon us. North Korea has the opportunity to end decades of poverty and oppression by following the path of denuclearization and joining the community of nations. And I hope that Kim Jong-un will ultimately do what is right, not only for himself, but perhaps most importantly, what's right for his people.
While President Trump said at this point the talks are off, he also left open the possibility they could eventually take place.
A lot of things can happen, including the fact that perhaps, and would wait, it's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. Nobody should be anxious. We have to get it right.
The news of the cancellation came hours after North Korea carried out what it said is the demolition of its nuclear test site facility on Thursday, setting off a series of explosions over several hours in the presence of foreign journalists. The North's decision to close the Punggye-ri nuclear test site is generally seen as a welcome gesture by Kim to set a positive tone ahead of the once June 12th summit. However, it is not an irreversible move and would need to be followed by many more significant measures to meet the president's demands for real denuclearization. The Trump administration has also launched a national security investigation into car and truck imports that could lead to new U.S. tariffs similar to those imposed on imported steel and aluminum back in March. The Commerce Department said Wednesday that the national security probe under Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962 would investigate whether vehicle and parts imports were threatening the industry's health and ability to research and develop new advanced technologies. To help break down that request, I spoke with Gary Huffbauer. He's a non-resident senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. I started our conversation by asking him to explain the case the Trump administration is making that car and truck imports affect U.S. national security.
Well, in my view, it's a very hard case to make, except if you take the view, which the president evidently does, that almost any manufacturing activity has a national security dimension. So what has been mentioned in the press commentary is that President Trump cards all the components of an automobile, which are a lot of electronics, the possibility of electric or hybrid automobiles. All these have technological aspects of them, some of them very advanced technology. And his view is that all this technology is critical to U.S. national security. This is not the view, which was contemplated when the law was passed way back in 1962, so it's a very old law. It was contemplated that the national security would refer to quite narrowly defined military products or technologies.
If we take a look at a larger picture, Toyota, Honda, yes. BMW, Volkswagen, Daimler, all their shares dropped by about 3% on this news. How do you see things playing out on the international stage?
Given what Trump has done with steel and aluminum, which are also national security tariffs, I think it's quite likely that this threat of a national security tariff or quota on automobiles will become the subject of negotiation, especially with allied countries. That would, of course, be Japan and Germany and others. And that President Trump will offer not to impose any tariffs on autos from those countries if they make other concessions in their trading practices. So I see it much more as a bargaining chip than a an actual imposition of the 25% tariff, which was used on steel and aluminum.
India happened to be the latest nation to bring a complaint against the United States steel and aluminum tariffs to the World Trade Organization. How do you think the WTO is going to view these new tariffs if they're ultimately implemented?
Yes, well, there would certainly be cases brought, but I guess a couple of things need to be emphasized. Firstly, that the WTO dispute system isn't terribly speedy. So I don't think this case that India's brought on steel and aluminum is going to succeed for India. And I don't think a case brought on autos would succeed for whatever countries might bring a case. But it does mean that other countries could do exactly what the U.S. is doing.
Gary Hofbauer is a non-resident senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Thank you so much for your insight today.
Hey, thank you, Steve.
Here are some other top stories from around the globe. International investigators looking into the shooting down of Malaysian Airlines flight MH17 over eastern Ukraine 4 years ago have identified the Russian military brigade that they believe owned the missile used to bring down the Boeing 777. U.S. President Donald Trump is calling for a radical change to the structure of U.S. aid to those countries deemed not sufficiently assisting the United States in stemming the tide of violent illegal immigrants. China's defense ministry said Thursday that a U.S. decision to disinvite China from a major international maritime exercise is unconstructive. For additional news stories and in-depth coverage, visit our website or download our mobile application to take the stories with you. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
For many Americans, it's almost barbecue season, the time of year for grilling and enjoying foods outside with friends and family. But several studies have linked grilling food with cancer. U.S. TV personality and physician Dr. Mehmet Oz says one way you can be harmed is by breathing the smoke produced by the grilling foods. He says the smoke contains toxic chemicals which have been found to damage the lungs when inhaled. But a new study published in the American Chemical Society's journal Environmental Science and Technology suggests that skin exposure to grill smoke may be more harmful than breathing it in. The researchers also say while clothing could reduce some skin exposure, once your clothes are saturated with barbecue smoke, your skin can absorb significant amounts of the harmful chemicals from them. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. Voters in the mostly Catholic Irish Republic are preparing to head to the polls Friday in a much-anticipated referendum on repealing a constitutional ban on all abortions except in the case where the mother's life is at risk. In 1983, the country outlawed abortion, although an exception was approved in 2013 to end a pregnancy when the life of the mother was deemed in jeopardy. Diarmaid Ferriter is a lecturer in modern Irish history at University College in Dublin. He told VOA's Victor Beatty in 1983, two-thirds of the electorate voted for the ban.
But the amendment has caused endless debate and trouble because of the wording of the amendment giving equal right to the life of the mother and the unborn. That in practice has been very problematic, and we've been debating this issue now for a number of decades. And it's finally come to this about whether or not the Constitution is the place for decisions about abortion, or whether it should belong to the political process through Parliament, through legislation, and to take it out of the Constitution altogether. So that's what's at stake on Friday, and the stakes are very high.
Why are they high?
They're high because this has been such a delicate, divisive and emotive issue in Irish society for decades. There has been no shortage of absolutist declarations about abortion, as happens, of course, in other countries. But it's been particularly intense in Ireland because of Ireland's historic Catholic identity. The population of Southern Ireland, particularly after the creation of the two states of Ireland in almost 100 years ago, the population was over 90% Catholic. And many of our laws and constitutional provisions have reflected that Catholic identity. But there are those who maintain that it is no longer fit for purpose and doesn't correspond to the reality of a much more diverse and modern Ireland. So this is also debate, really, about the increasing secularisation of Ireland and whether Ireland can retain its distinctiveness in relation to the conservatism of its approach to abortion.
Has the Catholic Church played a big role in the campaigning?
The Catholic Church has not been as active or as vocal or as visible as it was in 1983. The people who are leading the campaign to retain the amendment are largely Catholic lay groups. A lot of senior church figures, though some individual bishops have been vocal, a lot of senior church figures have lost a lot of credibility in Ireland over the last couple of decades because of child abuse scandals, because of an increasing secularisation, and a belief that the Catholic Church in Ireland had far too much power for far too long. The Catholic Church is also not able to control the parameters of this debate to the extent that they have done historically, because it's not just being discussed now in the context of religion and morality. It's also being debated in the context of feminism, of healthcare, and of the need for Irish women's voices to be heard. The idea that this is no longer an abstract moral or religious or theological question, that it's actually rooted in the everyday experiences of Irish women and their pregnancies. And in that sense, we've had a very significant shift in public discourse about abortion, and it's being accepted, I think, as a much more complicated issue than it was presented historically.
Diarmaid Feirteoir said Ireland's main political parties are backing repeal, but there is also what he called a well-organized anti-repeal campaign. He said abortion has been illegal since the 1860s, with the original penalty a conviction of murder. Subsequently, that was reduced to no more than 14 years in prison. Many Irish women wanting an abortion have had to travel to the United Kingdom, where abortion is legal. Recent opinion polls put the yes vote for repeal ahead, but those polls have since tightened, with about one in six voters said to be undecided. Reporter David Boyle traveled to Kuala Lumpur and sat down in an exclusive interview with Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, whose coalition scored a shocking upset victory at the polls this month. David asked the Prime Minister to share his view on how his goal has been set back, that Malaysia would eventually become a developed country by the year 2020, something Mahathir called Mission 2020.
Mission 2020 would have been achieved had they made the progress that we were making before I stepped down. But unfortunately, the two prime ministers changed direction. And because of the change in direction, we were not able to achieve Vision 2020. But we think that we can do so in a shorter time, beyond 2020, but we would be able to achieve developed country status in a few more years. Malaysia, of course, as you say, is a it's not a rich country. We don't have much natural resources as such, but we do have a plantation industry. It started a long time ago during the British period, but from agriculture we have switched to industry, and we have been able to grow our industry largely through foreign direct investment.
There's also a political element to the development or the developed status. Can you give us a sense of the depth, the sequencing, and the time frame of your reform agenda and the obstacles that you're going to encounter trying to implement it?
We inherited a country that has been very badly governed. The previous government has accumulated huge amounts of borrowings from other countries, from foreign banks, etc. So the first thing that we need to do, of course, is to ensure that we are able to service the loan at least, and to try and reduce the principal that has been borrowed. This is what is occupying our time now, because it's not easy. The borrowing has been huge for projects which are not really essential. But then the whole structure of government has changed. The old democratic principles have been neglected at the very least. We have no separation of power between the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. That has got to be restored. The constitution itself is all right, but it was subjected to abuses. So we need to change some of our practices. For example, we want to reduce the term of the Prime Minister to 2 years. We want to reduce his power also and transfer a lot to Parliament. So, for example, in the choice of senior officials of the government, it will be Parliament which will vet the candidates, not just the Prime Minister.
Mahathir also quashed any suggestion he was having second thoughts about abolishing a deeply unpopular fake news law introduced by former Prime Minister Najib Razak in the lead-up to the election. But he added that some controls needed to remain on the media to prevent the incitement of racial tensions. This is VOA.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. What are the realistic prospects of a permanent peace instead of the current armistice between North and South Korea? Does denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula mean the same thing to all parties? We'll examine the promise and peril inherent in the negotiations, with two regional experts. That's Encounter, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. The World Cup football tournament is set to kick off soon in Russia, and fans all over the world will be watching in person, on television, and online. I'm going to be one of them. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald shares with VOA's Jim Stevenson that American will be performing the official World Cup theme.
This is exciting news because one of the biggest multimedia stars on Earth, Will Smith, is aligning himself with the biggest sporting event on Earth, the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Will appear on the official song of the 2018 World Cup in Russia. You know, Will Smith has been largely absent from music since 2005. His first single in more than 10 years, Get Lit, appeared last October. Mm. It was a standalone song. And he hasn't given us an album since 2005. So for Will Smith to come back into the music world is an event. Will made the announcement Tuesday on Instagram. He tagged his collaborator Diplo, who will produce the song, along with reggaeton star Nicky Jam, who just picked up a Billboard Music Award last Sunday, and Kosovar singer Era Istrefi. Vibe magazine was the first to report Will Smith's involvement after a Puerto Rican producer named DJ Nelson let the info slip in an interview. Nicky Jam's manager Juan Diego Medina subsequently confirmed the news. He says that Nicky and Will finished recording the song last week in Budapest, and the song will get released on Friday, May 25th. The four artists are also believed to have shot the video for the song over the weekend. Past artists to include the official World Cup anthem include Ricky Martin, Anastasia, Pitbull, and Shakira, who did my favorite World Cup anthem, Waka Waka.
And those have all done very well.
They've all done very well. I mean, the World Cup is the World Cup. And anything associated with the World Cup is going to get international attention. The 2018 Football World Cup, for those of you who don't know, launches on June 14th in Moscow when host nation Russia plays Saudi Arabia. And the final will also take place in Moscow on July 15th. I love the pageantry of the World Cup, along with the excitement of the games. And I love Will Smith, too. I mean, the guy is just a great character. He's a great storyteller. I also happen to think he's a fantastic rapper, and I want to see if he still has any gas in his tank. So we'll find out on Friday.
As we've seen with previous World Cup musicians, they've performed live. I guess we can expect Will Smith will be performing live at some point.
I sure hope so.
We do too. Always performing each and every week, Ray McDonald and the VOA Top 20. You can hear it on VOA 1. Also catch Ray on Facebook
at VOA 1 The Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
All right, that is going to do it for us today. I'd like to thank Patrice Martin for directing today's program and Wojciech Zorniak for engineering the broadcast. But most importantly, I want to thank you for listening. If you haven't yet, be sure to follow the Voice of America on social media. You know, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you'll find pictures, stories, videos, and more. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have an absolutely fantastic day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said on May 15th that the United States is deeply concerned by the Chinese government's reported harassment of the Early Rain Covenant Church in Chengdu, Sichuan Province, after they planned to hold a memorial service on May 12th for the victims of the 2008 Wenchuan earthquake. She went on to say that the United States government joins the people of China in mourning the loss of tens of thousands of lives in the tragedy, and notes the value of memorializing their lives and calling for full accountability to prevent or mitigate future disasters. The Chinese government's actions are part of a broader pattern to restrict religious communities across the country from freely practicing their beliefs, including Uyghur Muslims and Tibetan Buddhists. Authorities are demolishing houses of worship, enforcing new restrictions in the amended religious affairs regulations, and prohibiting the sale of Bibles through online retailers. Promoting and protecting religious freedom globally is a foreign policy priority of the United States. Spokesperson Nauert said the United States calls on China to uphold its international commitments to promote respect for religious freedom for all persons.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.